Welcome to Love Babs Love Talk. I'm Babs Rolls Ivy. Thank you for tuning in. So today is a talk day. It's not a music day. It's not a mayhem day. It's a talk day. I'm here with Dorothy Tegeler, co-founder and deputy director of Asylum Seeker Advocacy Project. I was having a conversation with my good friend Sarah Lulu, who is the associate dean over at the law school, and she put me in touch with you, Dorothy. Welcome.
Thank you.
Because, you know, we are all enamored with this immigrant stuff that's going on with children being snatched from their parents.
Yeah, it's awful.
Immigrants being criminalized for seeking asylum. Mm-hmm. And people not understanding the difference between that, or not understanding any of this stuff, and thinking that these people deserve what they're getting.
Yeah.
Because they are somehow or other coming into this country illegally. And as long as that message is still being put out there on a day in, day out basis, people will believe what they're told. So I have you on today so that you could help us understand the truth of things.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Thank you for being here. All right. So tell me how did you get in this line of work, and then start telling me about what asylum seeking is.
Sure. So we founded the Asylum Seeker Advocacy Project, ASAP, back in 2015.
I love that. I love ASAP.
Thank you.
That's like with the quickness, right? Like,
yes, the acronym is very appropriate because we work in emergency situations. I founded ASAP along with three of my law school classmates, mm-hmm. Conchita Cruz, Swapna Reddy, and Liz Willis. And we founded it after going down to one of the large family immigration detention centers near mm-hmm. the U.S.-Mexico border. This was in 2015 under the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm.
And it was horrible. They were and still are detaining thousands of women and children in basically private prisons, breastfeeding babies, toddlers, in these prison conditions. So we went down there to volunteer when we were still law students, and ended up representing a woman and her son in there who were forced to have their full asylum trial in the immigration detention facility. And we had only a week to prepare the case, but were able to win her and her son's long-term legal status here. And she was an organizer in the detention center. And after she won her case, she kind of turned to us and said, "Well, I'm happy that I won today, but what are you going to do about the family who has a trial next week and the week after that and the week after that?" And she really pushed us to think about how we could do more and what we could do to serve these asylum-seeking families, even if we weren't going to be able to move to the U.S.-Mexico border. So that's mm-hmm. kind of how ASAP was born, because of our first client, who we're now representing. She's suing the government. We're still representing her. And we've been working since then to find ways to represent asylum-seeking families across the country who otherwise don't have access to legal services.
How many detention centers are there?
Oh, that's a good question. There are three that are specific for families that house women and children. Two are in Texas and one is in Pennsylvania. But there are many more detention centers across the country that are for immigrant adults.
Are they for-profit centers? Or are they nonprofits?
The family detention centers in Texas are run by private prison companies, the same prison companies that are involved in the criminal prison facilities.
Wow. So
they make a huge profit off of immigration detention.
Mm-hmm. So it serves them to
absolutely.
Have these immigrants held for a good period of time. For money.
It's a very profitable industry for mm-hmm. these prison companies.
Because that's at the heart of it for me. Because I always say follow the money.
Absolutely.
Follow the money and see why this is such a a big deal. Okay, so explain to a, give me a definition of asylum seeking.
Sure. So a lot of times you hear the word refugee, and asylum seekers are people who are trying to get refugee status. So it's the same definition as refugees, which is somebody who has a well-founded fear of persecution on the basis of one of five different protected grounds. So these are people who are fleeing severe violence in their home countries, who've experienced sexual violence, domestic violence, threats of death, watched family members killed, and they've come to the U.S. to seek safety.
And are these people from all over the world, or are we to believe just Mexico?
Well, the difference between an asylum seeker and a refugee is that an asylum seeker comes to the U.S. border, enters the U.S. and seeks asylum once they're here. So many of the recent asylum seekers are from Central America, from Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala, who've crossed Mexico to
because they've got a whole lot of violence.
They've got a whole lot of violence, and in those countries, it's not really possible to apply to become a refugee from abroad. So you think about Syrian refugees, for example, who can apply when they're in another country to become a refugee in the U.S. But these asylum seekers, the only way they have to come here to seek safety is to show up at the U.S.-Mexico border and ask for protection.
And so what happens to them after that? So you get to the border and you say, look, I need to get here because drugs, violence, whatever it is. And then so what are you told?
Well, as an asylum seeker, if you encounter border protection and you tell them, I'm here because I'm afraid to return to my country, then you're supposed, what's supposed to happen is that you get an interview to determine whether you have what they call a credible fear of staying, which means that you meet a very low threshold that you might be able to get asylum. And then what was happening before is often then people are released to await their full asylum trial wherever in the country they're going to be living. But now people in that situation are being criminally prosecuted and detained indefinitely.
And so this process of, or the policy of taking children from their mothers, is that a relatively new policy? Has this been going on?
It is. The policy of taking children from their mothers is a new policy. But even under the Obama administration, children were being taken from their fathers. So previously, women and children were being kept, mothers and children were being kept together, but fathers were being separated. And that's actually what happened to our first client who I mentioned earlier, was the father of her son was separated from them. And, you know, yesterday Trump announced that he's going to end the family separation policy and replace it with the policy of indefinite detention of families, which is really also horrible and not a solution to be locking women and kids up together.
So what does that mean? That everybody will be in jail together?
Exactly.
Okay.
Which is horrifying.
So, and how long, so is there some rule of law about how long families and people can be held without something happening beyond just being held?
Yeah, well, there's a court decision called Flores that says you can only detain kids for 20 days in most circumstances. And because of that decision, we don't know exactly what's going to happen with this new executive order, because under the law right now, kids can't be held in detention for more than 20 days. So if they're going to be keeping the parents in detention for even longer, what's going to happen to the kids at that point? And we don't really know.
But there are kids who have been held way longer than 20 days.
That's true.
And so what is the consequence of that? Is there any consequence to the government for this, for this, for this issue?
Well, I wish there were more of a consequence for the government. I think they're acting with a lot of impunity, and we're seeing increased abuses by ICE officials and border protection officials. And it seems that there's a culture that people can do whatever they want, and there's no consequence from mm-hmm. within the government. Different advocacy groups are pursuing lawsuits. We have a lawsuit trying to get monetary damages for the mistreatment of our client and her son in detention. So that's one way to try to sue the government for money for what they're doing. But people are pursuing different strategies to try to hold the government accountable. But honestly, it's a very difficult time right now, because the onslaught against asylum seeking families is happening from so many different directions
yeah.
at once.
So Dorothy, I'm a family, I'm with my kids, I'm in a detention center. Who is representing me? Do I go in front of this, do I have my trial without representation? Like, who stands on my team? Does anybody? Do they assign me an attorney? What happens?
Unfortunately, there's no right to a government-appointed attorney in immigration proceedings, which is awful if you think about how dire the consequences are at these trials, that someone could be deported, separated from their family, sent back to extreme danger and potential death, and they don't have the right to a government-appointed lawyer there as you would in a criminal proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
So some people are able to find attorneys, but not everybody is. Even children right now don't have the right to an attorney. So you could have a kid trying to represent themselves in immigration court
without a lawyer.
It's outrageous. And without a lawyer, less than 3% of families are able to win their asylum cases, because it's an incredibly difficult system to navigate on your own.
So how many hearings are they hearing on a regular basis, on a day-to-day basis? How many cases are they listening to?
The immigration judges, I don't actually know the answer to how many cases a given immigration judge is listening to, but their caseloads are increasing across the country.
I can imagine. So how many immigration judges are there? Like, are these immigration judges just doing this work, or are they on loan from other duties? You know what I mean? You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Like, I'm a judge. I do this on the side, or I feel like it's some kind of civic duty that I want to do, although I'm over here in wherever court I'm in for my job.
Right. So immigration judges are not actual judges the way we think of a judge in state
what?
Court or federal court. They're basically bureaucrats in the Department of Justice. And so the same protections that exist for example, a federal judge here in New Haven is appointed, has lifetime tenure, is protected from political influence in a variety of ways. An immigration judge is just a bureaucrat in the executive branch of the government who...
Seriously?
And, right now, the Department of Justice is imposing quotas on the immigration judges, trying to force them to give more denials and overturn more cases. So... this is their full-time job to be immigration judges, and they're not really judges in the way that most
that
people
we think
of
judges.
The word. Yeah.
And I find that quite misleading.
Yes.
Right? Because I think most people would find this quite misleading, because we're thinking that these are people who come with some sense of, like, a regular judge, like knowing something and understanding a different kind of set of understanding than just like me walking in and saying, I want to be a judge for the immigration department or whatever.
Yeah, they are, for the most part, attorneys. Often they're attorneys who previously worked for a different branch of the government trying to deport people. So
really? Mm-hmm. So if you're lucky enough to get an attorney to help you with your case,
yes,
and then they can go and advocate on your behalf in these hearings. And how soon do you find out whether or not you stay or go?
Well, the timelines are different depending on whether you're in detention for your trial mm-hmm. or not. And we have yet to see kind of how quickly some of these new cases under the administration's relatively new policies, how quickly those are going to move. I think there's not a totally consistent pattern yet.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, once you, for people who are released and, for example, have their case in Hartford Immigration Court or New York Immigration Court, you have to wait months or even years before you get your asylum trial. But then you can get a decision on the day of your trial or a week later. It can, you can get a decision pretty quickly, but you often have to wait a long time before your trial if you're not in detention.
So if you're waiting, are you waiting in these detention centers or do they let you move about the country?
Many people are living all over the country awaiting their asylum trials and are not detained, although a lot of people are forced to wear bulky ankle monitors and have a lot of reporting requirements. And ankle monitors are, although better than being in detention, also very horrible. And people experience a lot of discomfort, difficulty finding jobs because of their ankle monitors and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I can tell you. Yes. So what should we as Americans be thinking about immigration? Like, what? Why do we not know enough about this?
Why do we not know enough about it? I think that it's an intentionally confusing system and there's a lot of misinformation out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I would want people to know is that these asylum seekers who are coming here with their kids are really coming here to seek safety because they feel like they don't have another choice and they've risked a great deal to get to the U.S. This is the only way that they have under our laws to come and become refugees and get status and have safety here. And I think there's a lot of rhetoric about people lying or being lawbreakers or not waiting their turn in line, but that's just really not, it's really not the case.
And
these are families trying to do everything they can, trying to comply with all the laws and just
so
have a chance at a better life for their family.
And what you know, do you think there's hordes of criminals coming across the border?
No.
Do you think that these people are coming so that they can siphon off U.S. dollars?
Absolutely not.
What, in your estimation, do you think that these policies are racist?
Yes. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And how do you feel when you see the steady, constant stream of misinformation? I'm not even going to say misinformation. These out-and-out lies.
Right.
How do you and what you do in this organization that you serve, how do y'all combat? Because it's a steady diet of lies. And most people, well, I don't even know if it's most people. A lot of people are buying into this message and this notion of these people are coming here. They are plagues on our communities. They are raping and robbing us. They are stealing from us. They are, you know, they are a plague. These are not my words. These are the president's words. A plague on our fine way of living. How do you address that?
Well, I think it's incredibly.
Because you're a reasonable woman.
Well, I find it very disheartening and upsetting and really heartbreaking to hear this kind of language being used about other human beings. And I think not only does it have an effect on the public, but also on the families who are here just trying to seek asylum and live in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And ASAP runs a private online community for over 2,700 formerly detained moms. And when you have things like this in the news, you just see people in the group are so scared. They don't know what to do. They're just terrified. And they think that this means that they're not welcome here and they don't have rights here. And I don't know. I think I've been encouraged over the last few weeks that I think there's a lot more attention and a lot more outrage
yeah.
about these issues and about the separation of families
And children in cages.
And children in cages.
I mean, I think that did a lot to affect even people who are like, I don't want immigrants in this country at all.
Uh-huh.
They were affected by seeing these children in cages. And not a new phenomenon. Children in cages is not a...
It's not new. And it is truly... it's truly sickening, and I'm glad that people are outraged, and I hope that that outrage will extend to family detention more generally, even if parents and kids are kept together, to the detention of immigrants. Even if there aren't kids, it's still wrong. The militarization of the border. I hope that that we all can keep up our outrage, because I think these policies may evolve, but they're at their heart, they're not going anywhere. Right? Mm-hmm.
So, Dorothy, is this the kind of law you wanted to practice? Like when you stepped foot on Yale's campus to go to law school, what was your thinking? What did you hope to become?
Well, I came to law school after living out in California for 5 years and getting involved with the domestic worker rights movement out mm-hmm. there. And in particular, I had been working with doing organizing with people with disabilities who had home care attendants and were supporting domestic worker rights. So I came to law school interested in immigration, labor law, and disability law, and not sure where I would fit in all of that. But after going down to this center, this prison in Dilley, Texas, I just felt that this was the work I was called to do, and I had to keep doing it. And I still feel that way.
How many of you all are doing this work? Like, how big is your organization?
We're still very small. So there's four of us who founded it together, and then we now have two paralegals on staff. And we're hoping that we'll be able to increase our size and sort of start to scale up in the next year or so.
Mm-hmm. And when do you graduate?
I graduated in 2016.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So you are doing this work.
I'm doing this work.
So what do you want people to know about these people that are seeking asylum? What should we know? What's the truth of what we should know about these people? They're not monsters. They're not aliens. They're very much like how we are and what we would do if we wanted to ensure the safety and well-being of our own children, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, I'm working on a case right now where the mother watched her nephew being murdered by gang members who then threatened to kill her because she had told the police about what she saw. She had to flee essentially in the middle of the night with her young son. She came here. She tried to do everything that she could to seek asylum and comply with the process. And she ended up getting a deportation order because she never got notice of her court hearing. And she's now been fighting to just have her day in court for almost 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's just an example. That's just one person, but an example to me of, you know, people are just trying to get it right, and it's very hard. And I think when I think about how much trouble I sometimes have just going to the DMV and standing in line and trying to get my license renewed or whatever, and it's just a really and I speak English and I understand this country and I've lived
here. And you're white. So.
And I'm white. And exactly. And so I think, you know, people are just really doing their best and there's so many obstacles. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would want people to have a little more compassion, a little more kindness. And I would like people to, I would like for the country to be a place that welcomes people rather than turning them away. Although that's not in our history to do, I think it's. I hope that
even though we got a statue in a big ass river that says "Come, bring your tired, your poor, your huddled masses," we got something standing in the water saying "Come."
We do, yeah.
And yet we are not welcoming.
Exactly.
So. Talk to me a little bit, Dorothy, about where you think the future of this is going to go.
Well, I think, so right now the ACLU has a lawsuit challenging family separation that's pending. That's something that we'll see what happens. I think this Trump's executive order yesterday leaves a lot of open questions. It seems like they're most likely going to go back to the federal court that issued the rule that says you can't detain kids for more than 20 days and ask them to undo that and say, no, you can detain kids indefinitely, which we know is incredibly harmful to children to have them locked up in prison for a long time, for any amount of time. And I think we're going to keep seeing these mass prosecutions of people for border crossing.
Is there some education support going on? Is there some healthcare, medical support for these folks when they are in these detention centers?
They're in the family detention centers. There are technically, quote unquote, schools, and there is technically medical support. But from what we know, it's very inadequate.
So your organization is doing this work. How many people have y'all served?
We have so far prevented over 400 deportations, and we are connected with over 2,700 women through our online community.
Really? Mm-hmm. And you're a new organization. Who else is doing this work? Are y'all the only ones doing this work?
There's a lot of people working with asylum seekers across the country. I think we're the only organization that I know of that is willing to represent people regardless of where they're located. So we're trying to fill in gaps of places.
So what were people doing before y'all showed up? Before you became Asylum Seeker Advocacy Project? What were people doing?
Well, even with us existing, there are still thousands and thousands of asylum seekers who aren't represented. So we're trying to fill in the gaps, but the need is still really enormous. There's still lots of families who don't have access to legal help. And like I said before, it's almost impossible to win your case without legal help.
So, Dorothy, in doing this advocacy work, you still have to recruit attorneys to be down with this, right? You have to get folks who are of this mindset to want to do this work.
Yes.
Right? And do it for the long haul a little bit, maybe?
That's the hope. I think we have had a lot of different volunteers get involved, law students, lawyers, interpreters, all different kinds of people. And the best kind of volunteer is one who's makes a long-term commitment and says, you know, I'm going to work on not just this first case, but case after case, and really commit myself to immigrant rights.
Are they receptive to you? Like when you go to when you go recruit, like, hey, I need you, attorney so-and-so, John Doe, or law student John Doe or Jane Doe, consider this work. Because I know it doesn't pay. I know.
That's true, it doesn't. I think more and more people are very motivated by just the scope of the need right now. So I do think there's lawyers who want to volunteer and want to get involved. And we've had over 700 volunteers since we started in 2015.
Oh, okay.
So okay. We have seen a lot of people want to pitch in and just want to figure out how to do it. So I'm really encouraged by that. Especially right now, we have more volunteers than we can put to work. So
good.
Which is a good problem.
It's like a waiting list.
Yeah, we have a waiting list of volunteers.
I like that. You're going to need it for the days ahead.
Yes.
You're going to need. So I would imagine that some of this work you have to do is educating the American public, or any public, right? But the American public on what's the truth and what's not the truth of these. Is it against the law to cross the border to seek asylum?
It is against the law to cross the border without papers, and that's why people are being criminally prosecuted. Mm-hmm. However, it is also the legal process of seeking asylum, so there's kind of an inherent contradiction in that.
So do you think the penalty, so what would be the penalty? Like, what would this fall? Is this like a misdemeanor, crossing the border? Like, it's not a crime, is it? I mean, not a crime in the sense that you should be criminally prosecuted and then detained for some indefinite. It's not Guantanamo Bay, right? It shouldn't be that.
It shouldn't. I believe that crossing the border should not be be a crime. It does no harm to anyone. And the people, especially for people who are crossing the border to seek asylum, that is how to seek asylum. And the, at the there are some places where you can walk up to the edge of the border on a bridge, but at the end, then you're not crossing and you can't be criminally prosecuted. But what they're doing is really slowing down processing at those places and making it harder for people to present at those ports of entry. And seen images of people just sleeping out on the ground, waiting to try to get to talk to somebody to get in that way. So it's really unfair. It shouldn't be a crime. However, it is a federal crime. And people are being criminally prosecuted in federal court for crossing the border. I think I'm not quite as familiar with exactly the mechanics of how that's working, but my understanding is there are sort of mass prosecutions of dozens of people at once, and that people are generally being sentenced to time served and sent back to immigration detention facilities. But in the immigration facilities, people are being detained essentially indefinitely, and that is not for any kind of criminal reason. That's just awaiting their immigration proceedings.
So do you take donations? Like, how do you raise money for this? How do you pay for this work?
We do take donations on our website, and we also have been doing fundraising from some private foundations and grants. But we rely a lot on individual donations, and we're hoping that through the kind of increased attention to these issues for asylum-seeking families, we'll be able to use some of that increased energy and support to build and grow our organization in the months to come. Because, like you were saying, this is a long fight.
It is a long fight, and I don't think it's going to get get any better in the weeks and days and years ahead, as long as we have this administration. And that's not to say that the Obama administration was better at this, but I think they were better at this.
They were better. They were still.
It was still bad. But now we're at absolute worst.
They continue to find ways to make it worse and worse. And just last week, the Sessions issued a decision called Matter of AB that is attempting to make it difficult for asylum seekers who survived domestic violence to actually get asylum, which is a lot of people, and just a very cruel and heartless decision. And that doesn't have to do specifically with people who are being prosecuted after crossing the border, but it also does, because it's about, you know, the right of these people to seek asylum and to get protection here. And kind of another piece of dismantling those protections bit by bit is this decision last week by Sessions, which was really horrible.
So how much of morality is wrapped up in this work that you do? And do you use the morality card at all? Do you say to people, this is the right thing to do? We have to do this because it's the right thing to do. It's the humane thing to do. It's the moral thing to do.
I definitely do say that. Do you think that works? I don't know.
Well, I only ask this is because people will bandy about the Bible verses all the time about, you know, I mean, it was just said that, you know, the Bible says we got to follow some laws or whatever. And these elected officials are using this, using the Bible and sacred text as weapons against people.
Yeah.
And so how do you fight? You know, I was just wondering, how do you fight that back with, look, this is a moral thing.
It's a moral thing. Welcome the stranger. Treat all human beings equally and with respect and dignity. I think there's no question to me that the lives of human beings are more valuable than the sanctity of a line separating one country from another.
That's well said. So what do you hope for this organization, Dorothy? What is your hopes and wishes and dreams and aspirations? Because you're a young woman.
I hope that we're able to expand to a point where we can reach all the asylum seeking families in the country who want to connect with us, mm-hmm. and that we can be in a position where no asylum seeker has to go through the process alone, and where everyone has the tools they need to fight their immigration case. That's not going to happen in a year or two, but my long-term vision for ASAP is that we're able to really provide those tools and support to asylum-seeking families who need it all over the country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So do you have conversations with attorneys on the other side of the border?
In Mexico?
Yeah.
I haven't, but there's a really great group called Al Otro Lado that works on both sides of the border and is documenting kind of what's going on both sides. Mm-hmm. They're doing really, really great work.
That's good to know, because I just wanted to know that, because I would imagine there has to be some support on the other side, mm-hmm. in terms of what is happening and what is happening to folks. But Mexicans are not the only ones coming over. There's all kinds of people that come to the borders.
That's true.
Seeking asylum.
That's true. It's mostly people from Central America, but we've also seen people from Syria, Eritrea, Brazil, farther places who are making their way to the U.S. through the U.S.-Mexico border.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so they come to the U.S.-Mexican border as well?
Not in as high numbers, but yes.
But yes. Okay. And so, I will say this, Dorothy, that in the last few weeks, it has been amazing to sort of see, to actually see what is happening. Mm-hmm. And I think it has turned the tides on. It has turned the tides. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but at least it has elevated the conversation. Seeing the pictures of families and children has elevated the conversation. Like, it brought the conversation right on the dining room table.
Yes.
Like, no one can sort of escape it. I don't know how long it's going to be there, because we live in a very sort of short attention span world. Tomorrow we'll be back talking about the Kardashians.
Sure.
And we won't be talking about immigrants. But it just seems like the conversation has been elevated. Do you feel that way?
I definitely feel that way. I think a lot of people are talking about this, and we've been hearing especially from parents who are very affected by the images of kids being ripped from their parents' arms.
Because they have to talk about this with their kids.
Right, and that just, you can really, I think, for parents, it just feels so personal.
No matter what side of the game you, what, no matter what side of the coin you fall on, when you see these kids,
yeah,
you're like, you know what? I believe this is wrong.
I think so.
There's got to be another way to sort of do this.
Exactly.
Right. And so that seems to be, you know, raising the conversation. So you're doing this work. You've got these folks. You've got a nice list of waiting in the wings attorneys to help you do this work. How do you take care of yourself doing this work? Because you're seeing stuff that most of us don't see. You're hearing stories that we don't hear. How do you take care of yourself?
That's a great question. I think it's a challenge for a lot of people doing this work, and still a learning process for me to figure out how to take care of myself and find moments of joy in my own life,
mm-hmm.
and yet still work as hard as I possibly can for these families. And I think that's a balance I'm currently struggling with, working on, will probably be struggling with and working on for a long time. I hope I figure it out enough to be, mm-hmm. able to do this work for a long time.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Well, thank you so much, Dorothy, for coming. Today, I'm Babs Rose Ivy. This has been Love Babs Love Talk, 103.5 FM, live streaming on New Haven Independent and Facebook and Twitter. You can listen to this conversation again at 5 o'clock on the drive time, and then it'll be uploaded to SoundCloud so you can always go back and listen to it. My guest today has been Dorothy Tegeler, co-founder and deputy director of the Asylum Seeker Advocacy Project, ASAP, which that is the coolest and the best. It's the most appropriate acronym I've heard in a long time. And you are a Skadden Fellow?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Skadden Foundation has funded my salary for the past year and will continue to fund it for the next year, which is really wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because you have to pay your bills.
Yep.
You cannot be a superhero and homeless. You gotta pay your bills. And so this organization grew out of your time at Yale.
That's right.
Yes. I think Yale is a good incubator for goodness in the world sometimes.
I think it sometimes can be, and we were really lucky to have amazing mentors and supporters there.
Mm-hmm. I've met some of your folks. You know, I know Sarah Lulu.
Oh, Sarah's wonderful.
And I met Robert last night and his wife Elizabeth. So I'm shouting them out because they were lovely people to talk to. Really lovely people to talk to. And I had James Foreman on last week.
Oh, he's great.
Talking about his book and all of that. So Yale has been turning out some moral slayers out there, some moral advocates out there around some of these issues. And it has been a pleasure to talk to you. I hope you come
too.
Back.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want you to really come back nice and tell me here. What you know how y'all are doing and whatever we can do to help elevate the conversation. Well, I'd love to have you back on if you want to, and just like keep us abreast of what's happening.
Well, thank you.
And how this listening community can support. So I will tell you their website is asylumadvocacy.org. ASYLUMADVOCACY.org. You can reach them at 860-305-5978. So, and you're in New York. You're in New York?
Well, I'm based out of New Haven, but we have people
in New York
and Chicago. And
okay, so you all
we're all over the place.
Good. That's a wonderful thing. Thank you so much for getting here on short notice. So I will be back tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday. I have guests. I think I'm talking to some interesting people again, but I think it's going to be a shift. I think I'm talking to an artist tomorrow. So anyway, thank you all for listening in. This has been Love Babs Love Talk on 103.5 FM, WNHH Radio, live streaming on New Haven Independent, Facebook and Twitter. And you can always go back and hear this as a podcast on SoundCloud. Just look for the New Haven Independent WNHH site. I'll see you all tomorrow. Thank you so much, Dorothy.
Love me, love me, love me, love me, love me. faith.